Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
You've been listening to Jenny Green on this beautiful afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of June, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Stephen Ferris runs the rule over the Lions team picked to face Japan. Will the six Irish starters make their mark?
Again, the Lions threatening with the ball in hand. Murray goes himself. Terry Murray scores.
Terry Wills, what a moment. Connor Murray, when he picked it up, I thought for everything in the stadium, he had taken the wrong option. And then all of a sudden, he just burst into the clear.
Right.
Wow.
Sorry, Marie, I left the channel open there. That was the feedback. But anyway, Mark Langdon and Kenny Cunningham are with us to talk Euros ahead of the final group games for Scotland and England. And will COVID quarantine finally force Gareth Southgate to start Jack Grealish?
It'll be one of the proudest moments of my life, you know, wearing that number 7 shirt. It just filled me with so much confidence and precious a privilege, and that's the way I've always seen it.
And are you ready to live up to all of the hype, all of the expectation?
Yeah, of course I am.
Plus, we're continuing our build-up to Tokyo with Irish Hockey's Naomi Carl.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM. So, this afternoon, the field of 60 for the golf at the Olympics was announced, and Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy will represent Ireland. Rory McIlroy is ranked 6th in the world. Shane, of course, is 18th. So it was picked on world rankings. That's why they qualify. Obviously, neither played at Rio, citing concerns about the Zika virus for Seamus Power and Padraig Harrington represent Ireland. They finished 15th and 21st on that occasion. There are some noticeable absentees. Dustin Johnson's not going. Louis Oosthuizen withdrew as well. He's focusing on the FedEx. Sergio Garcia wants to get his place on the Ryder Cup team. He's not going either. But plenty of the big names are there. Team USA will consist of Bryson DeChambeau, Colin McIlroy, Cara, Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele, and any country can only have a maximum of 4 players. Team GB is Paul Casey and Tommy Fleetwood, and John Rahm will be there for Spain, and that takes place between the 29th of August and the 1st of September. I think we have a good team in that division, Marie.
Yeah, we do. We have a good team all round now. We'll be talking to Naomi Carl about the hockey later, so it'll be interesting to hear from her because she has a really, really good backstory as well. A player who is excellent at all sports and a good Clare woman too. Now, there was some news
She had to be from Clare the way we were talking her up there. She couldn't have been anywhere else in the country.
Played ladies football and camogie for Clare, so, and she played international
started
soccer.
Started playing
as well.
Against the boys.
Yeah, real superstar. Now, there is some news in the transfer world today. Republic of Ireland under 21 international Nathan Collins is Premier League bound. We had Stephen Kenny on yesterday talking about the importance of his players playing football, as much football as possible, as regularly as possible. So an agreement has been reached for his £14 million transfer from Stoke to Burnley to go through in the coming weeks. So that is really good news for him. Also, Irish international Leanne Kiernan is on the move. So she was released by West Ham at the end of the season and today has agreed personal terms with Liverpool. So she's going to team up with Niamh Fahey there at the club. So looking forward to seeing how she gets on. And then finally, after what has been speculated for a long time, Chris Shields has announced that he is moving from Dundalk to Linfield. So that is another link to Dundalk's most successful era being severed. So look, it's a big blow for Dundalk to lose a stalwart like that, but he has given them unbelievable service as well.
He surely has. I thought it was great to see 12,000 people at Royal Ascot last week, but the UK government has announced it will allow crowds of 75% of the capacity at Wembley for the Euro 2020 semi-finals and finals. That's 60,000 fans. Can you imagine 60,000 people at anything in this country right now? I can't. But anyway, look, they obviously will have to undergo quite a few regulations to get in there. All ticket holders will need to follow a number of strict entry requirements, including having a negative COVID-19 test or proof of full vaccination. Both doses, one won't do you. 14 days before the fixture, and ticket holders registered with a GP in England will be able to display their proof of vaccination via the NHS app. Do we even have an app for those kind of things?
Yes, we do.
Do we?
Well, we have an app, COVID-19 app.
But can you put your vaccination on it? No, I'm vaccinated. I can't put mine on it.
I'm not as old as you, Ruby. I'm not vaccinated yet.
See, no, Marie, I was in a vulnerable category even, seeing as I don't have a spleen.
Okay.
I'm immunodeficient. Immunodeficient.
Right. Well, that's you're still older than me and you're still in the vaccinated category. I'm not quite there yet.
I would have been vaccinated this week, actually.
Yes, you would have. Right, there is news from the GAA as well. So anyone who has been following the league over the last while will know that Michael Murphy has been out for a while. He was injured against Monaghan, and it was speculated that he would not make a return for a championship. But today Declan Bonner said that he is on track to make it. So they're playing against Down in the Ulster Championship on Sunday. So a lot of people will be tuning in to see if he does make it, because he's such a crucial part of their team. So from that, Ruby, you should be able to deduct that championship is back.
I thought you were going to ask me. I should be able to deduct what that starting 15 is going to be for Down. I was thinking, Marie, are you serious? Like, do you really think I would know that much?
I've gone two shows now this week without mentioning championship. It's time.
Are you in complete withdrawal? Are you okay?
I'm okay, but I'm actually going to be working at the Clare Waterford game on Sunday.
Well, that's enough of GAA. So in Donner's, in memory of Donica, we'll just move straight to the Lions.
Yeah, like the good
subject.
Old days.
Seeing as this is his favourite subject, and he was on two tours, in case anyone forgot, Donic O'Callaghan did go on two Lions tours. And joining us on the line to remind us, I don't think we'll talk about Donica, is Stephen Ferris. Stephen, the first, I suppose, team announcement came for the match against Japan at the weekend today. Plenty of Irish interest. Were you happy to see that many Irish players in, or is getting the game the first day a good sign or a bad sign?
Yeah, you always just want to get out and represent the British and Irish Lions, you know, so anytime you get given the jersey, Ruby, is an opportunity to impress the coaches, to do yourself proud, and, you know, do everybody else that's worn the jersey proud before you. So, yeah, like the likes of Rory Sutherland, you know, doesn't have huge international experience, but he's getting a chance at Loosehead. Ken Owens has been there for, it seems like, an eternity. He's in Hooker, and Xander Ferguson again, who got red carded. Nobody thought he was going to make the Lions tour because of getting that ban and everything. And, you know, it's amazing how things can flip on their head. So, yeah, there's plenty of Irish in there. Big Ian Henderson, Tag Byrne, Jack Conan, both those lads in the back row. Conor Murray, obviously, at nine. Henshaw, Bundy in the centre. So, yeah, like a lot of people, when Bundy Aki was named, started to say, geez, I wonder if Bundy and Robbie Henshaw could actually play in the test team together. Well, this is a great opportunity to see if they can play alongside each other at 12 and 13.
The last time of the last Lions tour in New Zealand, the first game was against the provincial New Zealand Barbarians, and the second row was the very same. Ian Henderson and Alwyn Jones. Only Alwyn Jones survived for the test, but Ian Henderson's getting another go.
Yeah, I think, like, Ian Henderson come on for James Ryan in the game against Wales in the Six Nations, if you can remember back. I mean, we know Peter O'Mahony got red carded in that game, but Ian Henderson hadn't played much for Ulster. He's the type of fella that needs to be playing every single week, and once he gets a run of games, he's a tough man to stop, and he certainly nails down his position. So, like with Ireland, he was absolutely busted in that game against Wales. He maybe played 60 minutes, he ran out of steam, and then he just got better and better and better as the tournament went on. And he's recaptured a bit of his old form as well, finishing off with Ulster. And, yeah, I think he'll go really well on this tour. He's a bit of experience there as well from 2017. We can remember, I think it was the midweek game against the Hurricanes just before the final test. And Ian Henderson started that game and was man of the match. I think he got yellow carded. The game had absolutely everything. I think I've maybe said that to you before, Ruby. But, yeah, he's got plenty of talent and ability. And he seems like a very shy fella off the pitch, you know, and he just lets his play do the talking when he's on it.
It's going to be fascinating, Stephen, to see Conor Murray and Dan Bigger and see how they get on together. But just in terms of combinations and building partnerships, how difficult is it to get it right and just get it together, really, when you're given your opportunity, given the fact that they're coming from so many different places?
Yeah, you know, it can be tricky. It's, you know, like watching the Euros at the minute and watching some of the teams. Yeah, so me as an outsider who knows nothing about football management, you kind of go, why is he playing with him? You know, they don't really work well together. And a lot of people are saying the same thing about the rugby, week in, week out, whether that's with Ulster or Leinster or Scarlets or whoever, or the international teams. And there's certainly players feed off different players. I'm really excited to see how Jack Conan and Hamish Watson go well together in this game. Tag Byrne, we know he can play in the second row, but he's given that opportunity at six. So that combination in the back row, and if things click, then, you know, if the back row go really well together, then, you know, you're sort of going, geez, this could be the back row for the test. And, you know, if it doesn't go well, then you're going to say, well, there's going to be changes made, you know, going forward in the next couple of weeks. And, like, if it goes really badly for Conor Murray and Dan Biggar, and they might not get another opportunity to play together before the tests actually come around. So it's vitally important. But the best way to do it, you know, for you guys to play together and play well, is just to do your own job and responsibility to the best of your ability, and everything will click. There's no point in running around, as Eddie O'Sullivan used to say, running around with your hair on fire trying to do everybody else's jobs. Just make sure and concentrate on your own job and everything will fall back into place.
Do you have to be slightly selfish, Stephen, to get your place on that test team? Do you have to just think about you rather than the team as a collective, or would that be picked up on too?
Yeah, I suppose I'm maybe contradicting myself, like when you say about, you know, playing as a unit, doing your own job. But it's when you're doing your job, when you're making that carry, when you're making that tackle, that you make sure it counts. You know, every time I took the ball into contact when I was wearing the red of the British and Irish Lions, there was so much venom and frustration and anger and enthusiasm into every single carry, into every single tackle, because you knew if you were just a couple of percent off that it wasn't going to be good enough to get yourself into the team the following week. So yeah, you just got to make a count, Ruby. There's going to be guys in this team that are going to get more opportunities because just the way certain games go, the opposition can dictate, you know, who gets the ball more. There might be a hell of a lot more kicking, so the back three might look more impressive than, for instance, the second rows, who will just be going backwards and forwards in the defensive line. So it really depends on the style of play. But yeah, you got to be selfish when you're carrying the ball and you're making those singular efforts during the game, that you definitely make them count.
You mentioned Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw there, and when you actually just consider the type of players they are, does that indicate maybe that we are going to see some Warren ball?
I don't particularly want to see too much Warren ball, to be honest with you, but yeah, possibly. Like, Dan Biggar likes to kick the leather off too, so does Conor Murray. And with the two big centre partnerships, two big centres in the partnership in midfield, there might be a bit of that. We know, like, if you get it right, it works, and it works very well. Like, you know, the South Africans can mix with that too. So, yeah, I'm excited to see how those two lads go. Bundy, didn't really see enough of him in a green jersey over the last year. Obviously disappointing with the way his World Cup ended, and of course his Six Nations ended. So I'm really getting behind him to try and give himself the best opportunity possible to get into a test team. But he's a physical guy, as is Robbie. I think Robbie's been the pick of the Irish players over the last 12 months. He's been sensational form. So yeah, just keeping my eyes peeled for those two lads.
Stephen, I've found through my career as a jockey that trainers were creatures of habit, and the more you look at coaches, the more you see similarities in what they do. So when you look at what Warren Gatland did 4 years ago, four of the team he started in his very first game started the test, five of the lads on the bench made that starting lineup, three of the starters ended up on the bench, and one of them stayed on the bench. That's 13 of the match day 23. Will the squad that are travelling now, will they be aware of something like that? Will they look back at what Warren did in the past and think, you know, that's only kind of maybe 10 or 11 places that might be up for grabs in that test team?
Yeah, well, if Tag Byrne or Jack Conner or Conor Murray are listening to this interview, they might go back through the archives, Ruby, and have a look to see if they've got a chance now. But no, as a player, you're certainly not, you know, thinking about what happened 4 years ago or 8 years ago in terms of team selection. It's just, you know,
I more
sure
meant the creature, the manager, rather than who actually played.
Yeah, I think for Warren Gatland, it's maybe more about the players that he understands and has worked with in the past. So, you know, everybody's going on about Stuart Hogg and about how good he's been. He's been brilliant for Exeter, and yes, he's been half decent for Scotland, but like Liam Williams, you know, is a serious athlete, brilliant competitor, and, you know, started the last test. So yeah, he's, you know, Stuart Hogg certainly not guaranteed a place. You've Josh Adams on the wing. He was, you know, try scorer for fun in the Rugby World Cup, and, you know, guys that Warren Gatland's worked with before, Dan Biggar in there, Alan Wynne Jones, and there's all this media hype about, you know, Alan Wynne-Jones might not start the test matches. You know, he's captain of the Lions, but he might not start. Like, I could nearly put my money on it that he will start, and it's just that other position beside him that's up for grabs. But creatures of habit, Ruby, I think Warren Gatland has mixed up his coaching setup this time round. I think there'll be lots more new ideas. But ultimately, when it comes down to team selection, Warren Gatland's going to be the guy that has the final say. So he might probably go back to a bit of habit and pick some, if there's a 50-50 call, he might go back to the likes of Liam Williams or Dan Bigger if it comes to the crunch.
It's funny you mentioned Liam Williams and Stuart Hogg, because Stuart Hogg started the equivalent of this match 4 years ago, yet Liam Williams started the first test. But Liam Williams wasn't even in the squad for the first game, and he is in this one.
Yeah, it's reliability for me, Ruby. Stuart Hogg is an extremely talented rugby player, plays on the edge, but he makes mistakes. And I've covered so many of the Ireland versus Scotland games, both home and away, and he's done something brilliant. And then 15 minutes later, you know, he's knocked the ball backwards. It's led to a try for the other team, and Scotland end up losing the game by 5 points. So, and at the elite level that we're talking about here against the Rugby World Cup champions in their own backyard, you can't afford to make one mistake. So, that position for me is certainly not nailed down for Stuart Hogg.
It's also worth noting as well that the four Exeter players are missing because they're in that Premiership final. And then some of the players have only come in on Monday, the lads from Saracens and also the likes of Tom Curry and Sinclair and Finn Russell. So that all has to be considered as well. And earlier today, Warren Gatland did face the media, and he said that he's going to give everyone a chance of a start, so he's going to give them all a run out. Another interesting thing he said as well, Stephen, was that they carried out a squad vote for their tour leadership group, and Owen Farrell got the most votes. I don't know him now, but I'm surprised he's so popular.
Yeah. So am I. I don't know.
Elaborate there now, the two of you. Why are you so surprised?
Well, I just think he looks grumpy, that's all.
Stephen?
Yeah. Like, when my wife's watching the rugby, she's like, oh, that guy Owen Farrell, like, when he's taking the kicks at goal, I would totally agree. He just looks very grumpy. And obviously the high tackles that have occurred over the last couple of years, some of those very controversial, doesn't help his cause. But he must be a brilliant team man. He's obviously been there before. He's got two previous tours, bags of experience, and he's obviously captain's England. So, yeah, he comes with high pedigree. I don't know him whatsoever at all. But, yeah, I think he's probably nailed on to start if the lads hold him in that high regard.
Was it not fairly straightforward? Like, all the English lads were certainly to vote for him because he's the team captain. The Irish lads were going to vote for him because his dad is the management of the Ireland team. I just think it makes simple sense, me.
I'm not sure about that, but I'd be interested to hear who else is, you know, going to be in this this leadership group. Is somebody with limited experience, is their first tour, are they going to be brought in? I'd love to see how this all pans out.
I'd be more interested to see who's not in it, actually.
Yeah, I would like to know who's in the entertainment committee. That's what I would like to know. Like, Donegh O'Callaghan, name was first in the hat. I'd love to see somebody like Finn Russell, I'm sure, is in charge of that.
It's good to get it going again anyway, because there was so much uncertainty about it for such a long time, and now we actually have a game and plenty of them to look forward to as well, Stephen.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. You know, I covered the game at the weekend, Benetton versus the Blue Bulls, and there was 1,250 people at the game. And you know what? It was absolutely fantastic. It was amazing. The atmosphere was great. You know, competitive rugby, like really everything on the line, especially for Benetton in that game. And it just felt like, you know, rugby is nearly back. It's nearly there. And I think the Lions Tour is just going to cement that, you know, rugby is back in a good place. And it just showed you how important fans are as well. Now, we're not sure of what exactly is going to happen over the next 68 weeks in terms of fans for the Lions, but you know, there's a good few who are going to be at Murrayfield this weekend, and there's going to be fans allowed into the Aviva Stadium over the next few weeks, especially with the Ireland Japan game also. So it's just brilliant to have fans back, everybody enjoying it, and you know, people are talking about it a lot more as well. When they see a game on the TV, like, people are stopping. What was the atmosphere like there, Stevie, over in Treviso? What's the atmosphere like here and there? And it's brilliant. So, I think everybody needs to pick me up Maria, I think Ruby, you can totally agree with us. You know, with the race, and it's just a real pick me up from the nightmare that we've all had over the last 12 to 18 months, that we can sort of see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, especially when it comes to professional sport.
And that maybe when you watched Denmark last night, you realised how much you did miss a crowd. Stephen Ferris, thanks a million. We're going to take a quick break.
Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Earlier today, it was confirmed that Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell have been ruled out of England's final European Championship group game against the Czech Republic and could also miss their last 16 clash. So if England do beat the Czech Republic at Wembley tonight, they will top Group D and play their last 16 clash on Tuesday at Wembley. But if they fail to win against the Czechs and finish runners-up, they will play on Monday in Copenhagen, meaning Chilwell and Mount would not be available. Kenny Cunningham is with me in studio, and Mark Langdon of the Racing Post joins us on the line. So Kenny, to you first, just in terms of Mason Mount, because he's obviously the one that's had the most impact for England, who is going to take his place? Will it be the likes of Grealish, Bellingham, Henderson?
Yeah, it depends really tactically how he sets the team up. Murray, if he keeps the two kind of holding midfielders, then he's limited a little bit in terms of who replaces. He's got to find a number 10 really. I think the obvious player then would be kind of Jack Grealish, just to slide him in behind kind of Harry Kane. I'm sure Harry Kane would like to see Jack Grealish in that number 10 position. You know, so creative. He might actually start creating a few chances for Harry Kane. So I think that'd be my choice. I don't think Sancho would play there. He's more likely to come in on the flank. So yeah, if it was a like-for-like replacement, my money would be on Jack Grealish.
Mark Langdon is also with us. Mark, we did see Grealish up for interview today, and often when players are up for interview before a big game, it usually means that they might get a chance to play in it.
Yeah, that is right. It normally is a telltale sign. I mean, all the kind of reports are in England that it will be Grealish for this game. I think in terms of, say, the last 16, I think it probably will be a horses for courses situation, and depending on who England are facing as to what type of player played in that position. For instance, if it was somebody like France who could be waiting in the last 16, then you might see Southgate, you know, take a backward step, and it might be Henderson in there. I mean, Bellingham's been fantastic for Borussia Dortmund and in the cameo roles that he's shown for England. I mean, I'd have no problem with him playing instead of any of the midfielders, really, the way that he's played this season. But I think Southgate, he mentioned it with Jadon Sancho in terms of he wants some experience in the side as well. And so maybe it's a little bit too early for Bellingham. There's also rumours that Saka's going to start on the right wing tonight for England, which would actually go completely against what Southgate said in terms of not picking Sancho because he lacks experience, and then going for somebody that has probably played less games than Sancho. Suspects it all leads really to the mind, really, that I think Southgate's a little bit confused and muddled at the moment in terms of what his best team is, what his formation should be, you know, system, style of play. It all just feels a little bit confused to me at the moment.
Kenny, when you watched the game against Scotland last week, it looked, and from what I've read as well, that Scotland sort of dictated the tempo of that game. England need to change this and dictate what's happening. I mean, they kind of need to win this to stay in Wembley, to give them a chance of getting as far as they want to get in this competition.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Ruby. Yeah, but to dictate the tempo of the game, you have to. You're talking really about the central and midfield area. That's where really you take control of the game. And I think whilst he persists with a partnership of Phillips and Declan Rice in that area of the pitch, I don't really think you'll see England kind of dominate, control the tempo of the game. They might have a fair amount of possession in there, Ruby, like, but the passing has been too conservative. Like, Declan Rice, if he plays any more sideways and backwards passes, like, I mean, 90% of his passes must be like sideways and backwards. That's just not good enough. He's got to start looking forward a bit more and start breaking the lines with his pass. And Phillips, I actually think Phillips, honestly, this season, it's probably his range of passing has been better than Declan Rice at Leeds. He's got a great switch of play, Phillips, over 30, 40 yards. He's more of a box-to-box player. all-action player, don't get me wrong. So, yeah, I think that's one of the big issues, one of the conundrums that Southgate is facing. Mark mentioned it there about Bellingham as an alternative in central midfield. You know, somebody with a great all-round game can get box to box. He's aggressive. He can get on the ball. He can pass. He can kind of dribble. I mean, those type of players kind of change the whole dynamic of the team and actually allow you to play with a modicum of control, Ruby, that you're kind of talking about. But it's all right. It depends what you mean by control. It's a bit hazy, isn't it, Ruby? Control. I mean, you can have control of the game, but just not hurt the opposition. An opposition team can actually concede control of the game to you. They can drop off and let you have the ball, you know. And you might think as if you're controlling the game, but actually you're not. At times, for me, the opposition team, if they're well set up defensively, even if they haven't got possession of the ball, if they're good enough, they can be actually controlling things out of possession of the football. So I just think he's got to make some big decisions. He's got to make them quick, Southgate. I just feel as if he's too much of a pleaser for me, Gareth Southgate. He's trying to please absolutely everybody. And even this incident with kind of Chilwell and Mason Mount, I mean, I believe it was caught on camera. I haven't read too much about it. The players and Billy Gilmore were talking. But I wonder if that hadn't been caught on camera, those three players talking in the tunnel, and it hadn't been brought to Southgate that, look, Billy Gilmore now has been tested. We have it on good authority. He was talking to the two lads. There's been no camera. Nobody's seen it. There's been no public discussion. What are we going to do? My money is there's no way those two players would have been taken out. They've only been taken out because it's been commented on, it's been put out in the public, and he feels this kind of obligation to do the right thing, that, you know, as opposed to potentially what's right for the squad. So for me, trying to please too many people, even Saka coming in tonight, that's amazing. I love that. Saka, he's a lovely player, but I think he's had a falling out with Sancho. I mean, it's a bit left field, this one. There's been no discussion. But that first game of the group against Croatia, a lot of people were talking about Sancho playing right of a three up front. And I thought he'd play. And he didn't play. And not only that, he didn't make the bench. And Saka made it onto the bench ahead of him. And Ruby, that's unknown. That is absolutely unknown, to put someone so inexperienced, Saka, ahead of a more of established player like Sancho. I don't think Sancho was happy not making the start in 11. I wouldn't surprise him. He told Southgate what he thought of him, and Southgate then actually put him off the bench. Because for me, it's absolutely incredulous that he didn't make the bench for that first game. Sancho, the form he's been in, forget about the fact that the amount of England caps that he has, he's playing, he's excelling at a high level in German football and Champions League football. He's got absolutely nothing to prove, that young fella. I just don't understand it. You know, Sterling getting regular games when he hasn't put in a performance for Manchester City for kind of 4 months, but it seems as if that's too much of a contentious decision to make, to leave Sterling out. There'll be repercussions from that. It's almost like Sterling's untouchable for some reason, regardless of the form that he's in. So it comes back to my point about Southgate. I just think he's too much of a pleaser, trying to please everybody, and they're going to come unstuck at some stage. It may not be tonight, but they keep going down the path they're going, England. It's only a matter of time before they bomb out this tournament.
Mark, just on the COVID situation, there was pictures of Mason Mount as well with his arm around Billy Gilmore. And today, Gareth Southgate did raise the point as well about why none of the Scotland players have been close contacts.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely bizarre, isn't it? I mean, yeah, there's close contact at all times, you know, in the penalty box, there's people holding each other, and you know, that's allowed. It's really odd. It doesn't appear to make any sense.
So why has he done really, it, Mark? Why is he taking those two players out then?
Well, I think it's because, you know, it obviously, you know, it was seen as it became a public England and sort of public health incident, really. So, I mean, it was taken out of Southgate's hands to a large extent. And, you know, it's a bizarre rule. I mean, nobody can quite understand why that the two players in question have got to sort of isolate while, you know, you're allowed to play against them. It doesn't make any sense. And I actually think that Mount will be a big loss, probably not against the Czech Republic, but in that last 16, you know, Mount has become such an important player for Chelsea. You know, the work that he does off the ball, sort of a real modern day number 10. A number 10 used to be sort of seen as a bit of a lazy type player that could just get on it and kind of spray passes left and right and kind of do what they want. But Mount is sort of that new kind of number 10 that defends from the front, and it has become a really important player. So it's a blow. It's a definite blow.
So basically, Mark, what he's done is, what you're saying, Mark, is he's weakened the team. He's weakened the team at the expense of potential personal criticism which he would have got from Public Health England.
Well,
so he's sacrificing one of his best players because he doesn't want to be had a finger pointed at him.
Kenny, also they had a 25-minute conversation in the tunnel, and the maximum they were supposed to have was 3 minutes. So that was the first time they'd caught up since the Champions League final. So they really went too far with what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, but Mark's just made the point. The players are in closer contact on the pitch for a large period of time. We know Billy Gilmore has had more contact with the entire Scottish squad during this period. So the whole thing's an absolute farce. It's only perception. I don't agree he was taken out of Southgate's hands. For me, he should have been stronger. That's strong management, those difficult moments. You stick by your players and sometimes you make the difficult decisions, even if it means you get a bit of a blowback in terms of like Public Health England or whoever it is. You take it. You take it, you protect your players because they're the most important thing. The squad is the most important thing. And I think in this instant, Gareth Southgate comes across as weak. I think it's weak management.
Look, we've all lived in COVID for the last, whatever it is, 16, 17 months. I don't think any of us are absolutely certain of what is close contact and what isn't. But Kenny, picking on Gareth Southgate's mentality, looking at his teams, do they play not to lose but never playing to win?
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, because I think he could very easily put an England team on the pitch with the players he has available to him that could literally take England to another level. And for me, it's not good enough for Ruby to be talking about, oh, Bellingham, not enough caps. You know, Sancho, not enough caps. You know, these type of Grealish, not really enough caps. Injured towards the tail end of the season. Well, you could flip that over and say physically he's in the best condition he could be. He's had a fresh break. He's come back and he's looking sharp. So it's almost like the half full, half empty. He's looking at it too negatively for me. He could be a lot braver for me in his choice of personnel and formation. Sacrifice one of those holding midfielders. Mark was talking about it there. And introduce another attacking midfielder. Play with his 6 and 2 number eights. You know, get that kind of sense of adventure to the team. I really think that's there, that's possible. I think there's a team mainly could put on the pitch, Ruby, that could actually go and win this competition. I'm not saying it's definitive. You know, it's not a perfect team. And it's the type of team I think has to go on the front foot, attack the opposition and score goals to win. Because I think defensively there's a few frailties in the team. But I still think it's there. There's a team there. If you can get the likes of Foden, Mount, Grealish, Sancho, Bellingham, whoever it is, and just get the balance right in those forward areas of the pitch, there's a team there that can score a handful of goals between now and the end of the tournament. I just fear as if he's not going to put that team on the pitch.
And Mark, what should he do about Harry Kane, just given how he doesn't look like he's fully fit, he's not playing that well, but yet he has come out and said that he is going to start him? And then if you consider as well all the reports suggesting that Manchester City have offered 100 million for him, there is a lot going on with him.
There is a lot going on, but I mean, I definitely don't think that Harry Kane is the problem at the moment. You know, he's been given no crosses to go out. He's been given no through balls. He's been given no passes that have broke the lines. You know, he basically has been up front, sort of isolated, really, at times. I mean, and I also think that, you know, when Rashford came on and replaced Kane, he made zero impact because he was getting the same service, which was absolutely nothing. I think it would be crazy to, as long as he's fit, and you know, there's been no sort of suggestion that he's not. If Kane's fit, he should definitely be given this game and the next couple, because you're really only looking at Dominic Calvert-Lewin as the sort of next in as a natural centre forward. Rashford spends most of his time out wide now, and I mean, I think Kane is considerably better than Dominic Calvert-Lewin. You'd have to change your complete way of playing to suit Calvert-Lewin. You'd probably end up playing even longer balls than what England have done so far, which when they've played sort of a target man forward previously, they have sort of tried to bypass the midfield, and I don't think that's the right way to play. I mean, the fact there that you're talking about Harry Kane being the subject of a £100 million bid tells you, I think, all you need to know about his qualities and the fact that Man City want him. I would have thought any striker would have struggled up front for England in them opening two matches. He needs to improve, but I mean, his record over the last sort of what, 7-8 years suggests that he will do just that. You know, he's a three Golden Boot winner. He was the top assist maker in the Premier League this season. He won the World Cup Golden Boot 3 years ago. I don't think he's the problem. He's not played well so far, but it's only two matches.
And Mark, speaking about Harry Kane and that £100 million offer, we listen to you every week, have your finger on the pulse in the UK. Is there any truth to the rumour that his contract binds him to stay with Spurs, and this could end up a bit like Lionel Messi last summer, wanting to leave Barcelona but never getting away. Could Harry Kane be in the same boat?
I think he's in the same boat this year because Tottenham, you know, Harry Kane didn't need to sign that long-term contract when he did, and you know, he's now given up a lot of power to Spurs. There's not that many modern-day players would sign that length of contracts, and he's got 3 years left, so it's very much in Tottenham's court. I mean, I would hope that if Daniel Levy did promise him he could move, then it would be pretty bad form if he then changed his mind and went back on that. I think that Kane is probably struggling here because he hasn't got a powerful agent. He's representing himself effectively. His brother is part of that sort of management team, but he hasn't got a Raiola or a Jorge Mendes to help him out of this situation. And for all that Raiola and Mendes and people like that get heavily criticised, they normally get the player where he wants to go and when he wants to go. And I think that the mistake Kane made was signing that long-term contract a couple of years ago, which handed over a lot of power to Tottenham. I still think that, you know, if Man City up the offer enough, then, you know, Tottenham have shown before that they will sell. They sold Modric, they sold Gareth Bale, but 100 million, it sounds crazy, but that's not going to cut it, I don't think. And talk of swap deals with Sterling and Jesus and Aymeric Laporte feel wide of the mark to me simply because of the wages that they're on at Manchester City. I'm not sure they'd get that at Tottenham. So how do you compensate, them in that way? I think that becomes really tricky. You know, Man City are going to have to really go some, I think, to have any chance of getting Harry Kane. As mad as it sounds, 100 million probably, you know, is, I mean, I would have thought this at least 40 million short, really, of what Tottenham would be looking to do business at.
Wow, those numbers always surprise me. Well, we do have an English team. So as predicted by you, Mark, Saka is in and so is Grealish. So Pickford, Walker, Shaw, Rice, Stones, Maguire, Grealish, Kane, Sterling, Phillips and Saka. Kenny, what do you reckon?
Well, I reckon Harry Kane will be happier. Saka, predominantly left foot, will play off the right, but he's a clever little operator coming in on his left foot. He can see a pass. He's a good dribbler. So Kane will benefit from getting close contact with Saka, excuse the pun, and Grealish in the number 10 position as well, you know, operating 10 yards behind Harry Kane. At least that'll mean Harry Kane will know he can keep his position high up the pitch, which he hasn't been doing of late. He's been drifting towards the halfway line to get a couple of touches at the ball and just taking himself out of the game. So I think with Grealish there, he knows, he trusts him to get on the ball, get on the half turn and find him to his feet and find those clever little angle balls for him to get down the sides and in between opposition centre their halves and get a few shots on target, which he hasn't been able to do. So a better supply line for me for Harry Kane tonight. Sterling for me is still very lucky to be in the team. He's playing those two holding midfielders again. If you're going to do that, I'd love to see Bellingham in there ahead of one or two of those centre midfield players. That's not going to happen. And Maguire, of course, is getting some much needed match time at the back.
And Mark, everyone has been calling for Grealish to get in for such a long time now. He has his start after making that cameo against Scotland. He's going to be under pressure, really, to perform now.
Absolutely, yeah. It was quite ridiculous, really, the clamour for him against Scotland. If you were maybe only a casual football viewer, I don't know what you're expecting to see when he came on the pitch. Some kind of godlike figure, the way that people were speaking about him in the first half. He's obviously had a fantastic season for Aston Villa. Doesn't usually play in this position, usually off the left. So it'll be a change for him in that regard. The one thing I'd like to see is him release the ball a little bit quicker. Because he's so skillful, he holds on to it and can sort of hog the ball a little bit too much. So he just in that number 10 position just needs to release it a little bit quicker so that he can get Kane away. There is big pressure on Grealish. You know, he's being likened to Gazza and sort of, you know, having that kind of impact on the team. I mean, that is, you know, in English terms, that is just about a sort of bigger weight on the shoulders as what you can get. Sort of, you know, been looking for the new Gazza basically ever since Gazza wasn't allowed to go to the World Cup in 1998. It's been a problem position. Had many good central midfielders, great central midfielders, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Paul Scholes, etc. But none of them have quite sort of caught the imagination of the public in the way that, that Paul Gascoigne did. And, you know, Grealish will probably only get this game to show that he can do it. And that is massive pressure. You're absolutely right. You know, usually a player would and should require a couple of games to get their feet in. But I suspect if he doesn't perform to a very high level against the Czechs, he probably won't play in the last 16. I'm not sure that Gareth Southgate is as in love with Grealish as what sort of most of the English public is.
Kenny, obviously the Czech team has been announced as well, and I have it here in front of me, but I'm not going to try and pronounce too many of their names. But where will the dangers be for England when you look at that lineup?
Well, obviously the centre forward Patrick Schick has started the tournament really well. He's impressed me. He actually had a difficult time in Italy, was at Rome, but he's ended up back in Germany. He's had a good season there and kind of found his confidence again. But he's a handful, good physical size. I think is one of his two goals the other day. And if you remember, cross into the box, kind of powerful header. You know, a lot of people talking about the second goal, but the first one for me was just as impressive. He's quite mobile as well. You can't pigeonhole him really, Ruby, in terms of why he's a physical lump. He just pins centre halves. He's a focal point. He's physically strong. He competes, but he's mobile enough. He can run the sides as well. But it's can't get away from the two West Ham players for me, particularly Souček in centre midfield. He's a huge danger on set pieces. Absolutely fantastic header of the ball. Goes not just set pieces. It's just in general play, just goes into the box and very difficult to deal with. So England have to be very careful to stop crosses, not give away too many cheap free kicks. I'll mention Koufal as well, the right back, because a brilliant season he's had at West Ham, getting forward at every opportunity. Very good all round full back. So I suppose it's the obvious, the usual suspects really. But yeah, they're going to have to deal with Patrick Schick up front, and Maguire coming in for his first game. You know, I'd argue there's a calculated risk in putting Maguire in tonight against somebody like Schick, because obviously he wouldn't be up to speed match fitness wise. Maguire, we know he's a little bit lumpy anyway, Ruby, in terms of his movement and his athleticism.
Oh, I know he is. I'm a United fan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, preaching the converted there. So yeah, they just have to be careful. I think Luke Shaw might have to protect him there a little bit as well. He's experienced enough, Shaw. He plays at him at club level, just to get around the side of him. Don't leave him, create too much distance between himself and Maguire, so they can get down the side. So I think again he'll stay close to Maguire this evening and just kind of protect him a little bit. But it's going to be a good contest. This will be a test for England. They're in good form, the opposition team. But even those changes, I would have made more changes myself, like I said. But even seeing Saka, Jadon Sancho must be absolutely fuming. I hope we get a few close-ups of him in the stand this evening. Oh, I say he'll paint a picture, like the facials he'll be pulling. I say his boots won't be on, his socks will be off, his shin guards will be hanging around his ankles, you know, giving off that vibe, i.e. I am not happy, without actually saying it. So yeah, a lot of pressure, you're saying, on Grealish, a lot of pressure on young Saka's shoulders. But I'm really pleased for him that he's got the opportunity. And Mark says about Grealish, one bad game is going to be out of the team. Well, clearly it doesn't apply to Raheem Sterling. It doesn't matter if he has a bad game, he stays in the team. So
bad, yeah. Season, we all got a bad game. He's got a kick all year.
And Mark, we also have Croatia and Scotland tonight, and Scotland, they've got it in their own hands really, because with victory they can progress as one of the four best third place teams. But it's really hard to square that off with the fact that they're the only team in the tournament yet to score a goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they did get a lot of praise, and they deserved a lot of praise for the way they played against England. But yeah, you know, at some stage they have to score a goal. You know, because they've played two matches, they've been in both games, they've created opportunities, they've had moments of excitement, but you know, they've still not scored a goal. They lost to the Czech Republic. This is a big opportunity, because I think Croatia, the World Cup finalists 3 years ago, know that team's completely gone. You know, this is a very beatable Croatia side if Scotland can sort of play to the same standards that they have so far, but then find the finishing touches. And you know, Shea Adams looked a threat. He definitely did at Wembley against England. And Lyndon Dykes is you know, he's a very physical striker that you can knock the ball up to. So they've got the players there to cause problems. You've just got to get hold of that midfield. That's the one area where Croatia are quite strong. You know, Modric getting on in age, but he's still capable of dictating play. So they need to be able to get around him. Home advantage, we've seen, I think, you know, in certain games, particularly that Denmark one last night, even if it's not full, and it won't be as full as what that was, but, you know, it can play a part. It's a big opportunity and a real one that they've got to take, Scotland, because, you know, you don't know when it will come round again. So they need a really big performance. And although Billy Gilmore's out, I think the strength of the team is in midfield. You know, they've still got quality players in there. So a massive opportunity for them. They've just got to score a goal.
Yeah, that is the must-win for them tonight. But obviously last night's must-win game was Denmark. Kenny, you were commentating, and I must say, I really enjoyed watching it. The passion, the energy, it was really thrilling stuff to watch, especially the last 20 minutes.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the whole of the last 20 minutes there, Ruben, your description, because the first 60 wasn't all that. I've got to be honest with you, first half wasn't great, was it?
They looked a bit nervy. I'm at 20 minutes to go.
Yeah, they looked a bit nervy, didn't they? First half, Denmark, a bit kind of tense. I actually thought the Russians, without creating too many clicker opportunities, were probably the better team, looked more comfortable in their skin without presenting too much of a threat. But obviously the goal came out of nowhere, the first goal, obviously gave them a little bit of confidence. But even the start of the second half, Ruby didn't really take it on from there. Actually went back into the shell a little bit before they were kind of gifted that second goal. But I give them a lot of credit, having given up the penalty kick 2-1. Kind of the demons, the gremlins would have been between their ears then, but they picked themselves up, drove forward, kind of energised the crowd and got two fantastic goals and were worthy winners in the end.
Okay, well, those two games, Croatia and Scotland and Czech Republic and England, do kick off at 8 o'clock. And Mark, you mentioned Gilmore there and him being out. Well, Armstrong is in a straight swap for him. So Kenny, thanks so much for coming in. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back with Naomi Carroll.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we are going to continue with our build-up to the Olympic Games. And yesterday, a squad of 16 players were named to represent Ireland in the women's hockey in Tokyo. And one of those players is Naomi Carroll, and she joins us now on the line. Naomi, we've been talking to a lot of people who have qualified for the Olympics over the last while, and just the common theme is a dream come true.
Absolutely. Hi, Marie. Thanks for having me. Oh, no, it's just unbelievable. It still hasn't really sunk in, so I think the excitement really take off in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and look, we've been following you now for the last while, and you know, we're watching the European Championships, and we've been talking to a few of your teammates over the last while as well, and it's brilliant that 16 of you are going to represent Ireland. But it was really tough for the ones that didn't make it.
It's exceptionally tough. Yeah, there's a squad of 31 of us who've been training, and the Olympics is different to any competition in that you only have 16 players that go, 16 players and 3 reserves. So normally you would have 18 players, and over in the Europeans we had 18 plus 2 reserves. This is tough. I've been on both sides myself. I've been selected and there's other times that I've been left out, and it's heartbreaking. It's very, very hard to take. But I think for us, the ones that are lucky enough to be selected for this tournament, it's just so important to remember that it is a squad of 31 and that everybody has played such a huge part to get here. And even players who aren't involved at the minute who've been involved before, that the pathway that they've kind of created and all the work that has been put in the years gone by.
Naomi, you know what that feels like, because you weren't always selected on these hockey squads. You weren't in that famous team a couple of years ago that went to the World Cup. So you know what it's like to be on both sides of being picked and dropped.
Absolutely, yeah. In 2018, I was a non-travelling reserve for the World Cup. So it was so tough. It was a bittersweet kind of time for me, because obviously I was incredibly proud of the girls and everything that they had been doing over in London. But it's very tough to take yourself, because you're kind of questioning different things. You know you gave it 100%, but still 100% of the time wasn't good enough. So it's really hard to take. And it's different from GAA. On any given day, you can have 15 players and 5 subs, and then you can have the rest of the panel around. Whereas with hockey, even in normal trips, you have your 18 who go, maybe your 2 reserves, depending on where the country is, but the rest of the team are sitting at home. So it's a hard one.
I love this time as well, Naomi, when we're heading into the Olympics and we get to hear from all the different athletes and we get to hear their stories as well. And, you know, yours is such a great one because you're the type of athlete who, from what it seems like is anyway, that you can just play every single sport that you turn your hand to. So there's ladies Gaelic football, you've had camogie, soccer, you played inter-county in both the ladies football and camogie and international level in soccer as well. You must have done nothing else growing up bar play sport.
Yeah, it's funny. I'd have tried my hand at anything, but it was the McGraths in Craslow, Joe and Eileen McGrath, who'd have really started me off because sport wouldn't have been big in my family. So they'd have been bringing me down to training in Craslow with the boys and Maura. She'd be still my best friend. We'd have started off together. So it went from kind of doing a bit of hurling and football with the boys to getting involved with the girls' teams to then my mom's cousin, Mo Kelly, would have got me involved in trying a bit of hockey. It'd have been soccer, small bit of basketball. Wouldn't have had the height to continue with that, but gave everything a lash. Bit of golf as well on the side. Just have always enjoyed everything, really.
So those McGraths that you mentioned there are the parents of Conor and Maura, so both inter-county players as well. But just even where you're from, Naomi, just Craslow has produced some amount of players all around your age, like Sir Conor Ryan, Podgin Salt, Sean Collins, Liam Markham, Cathal McInerney. It's amazing, really, that it has produced a generation of stars.
Absolutely, and I've been really lucky to have had the opportunity to play with a lot of those names. So I think growing up, it was just huge. Like, they'd have treated me the exact same as anyone else going out to training, and it was a brilliant start for me and for Moira, the two of us going down.
And you had Podge there then when you did your cruciate, and he'd been through the cruciate as well, and he had plenty of advice for you.
Yeah, I was pretty unlucky with that. I'd gone up to Dublin for my surgery. It was in September, so it happened in August 2018, and went up for the surgery. The surgery got cancelled on the day, so it kind of felt at the time it was blow after blow. After a blow even, and I met with Podge the next day, very disheartened, and he just chatted to me and he gave me really good advice, and I said it was the drive I needed to get going again and to realise that feeling so sorry for yourself and give this a good lash and get back and get fitter than you have been and get stronger and really push for the hockey if that's what I wanted to do.
So when you started rehab, what was your goal? What was your aim? When you sat on the floor in the gym, couldn't bend your knee, looking in the mirror, wondering will this leg ever work again, what was your dream that made you go?
Do you know what? I actually just kept taking it day by day and week by week because I thought if I looked too far down the line, I'd actually never reach it. And I had been so dejected in 2018 that I didn't want to add to that. So for the first week, it might even be able to put on your sock. It sounds so silly. But at the time, I think, yeah, well done. Yeah, you're after doing that. Yeah, you've been there yourself. You've had enough injuries, Ruby, over the years. But it was little things every single week. And each time I accomplished them, I said, oh, like, push yourself a little bit harder. And it'd have been like Clare Camogie and Clare football would have been exceptionally good, and Conor Shannon was, and he actually did his cruciate around the same time as me and would have been absolutely exceptional in helping me rehab. So we had the two of us were able to bounce off each other and kind of push each other along as we got into the more serious stages of getting back.
Well, Naomi, good things always come to those that wait, and your good thing came yesterday, and I wish you all the best in Tokyo. Thanks a million for taking our call. Marie, I think we haven't got time for much more. You're on holidays for a while, are you?
I'm a bit of a working holiday, doing a bit of the golf, doing a bit of GA, going away for a few days. I'll be busy.
Oh, hobnobbing it in Mount Juliet, rubbing shoulders, Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry, Pádraig Harrington. Any chance I might get them on as guests then?
That's the plan.
Proper order. Tara Stewart's up next. That's about all we have time for. Thank you, folks.
Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.